Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello and welcome everybody to episode number 242 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We have the usual cast of characters here tonight, and we have a guest who we will introduce shortly. But before that, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, so we're just going to kind of jump right into it. Cheryl, I think, is going to get up and leave, right?
Cheryl is going to Bill. She has company here.
She's entertaining.
Well, kind of. We've been putting together gift baskets, so we need to finish that up.
So. Yeah, so Cheryl is entertaining, and we're not.
You can be entertaining sometimes.
We try. We do our best.
Yeah.
But since Cheryl is going away, we figured we would bring someone else in who can talk about some interesting things that are ham radio and open source related in a big way. This is something we have talked about on the show before, but we have not had this particular guest on our program in almost or maybe more than 5 years. So, Yeah, been a long time. But I will introduce him now. His name is David Rowe. His call sign is VK5DGR, and he's in Adelaide, down under. So, morning for you, David.
Yeah, good morning to you, and thanks for having me on the show again.
Well, thank you for doing the short time, short notice yes to my inquiry and coming back on the show.
Yeah, sent out at like 2 o'clock this morning our time.
Yeah, but it was a reasonable time for him.
So well, that's the important true thing. Yeah. So,
but he is going to have some very interesting things to say, and we're going to have a good talk about some of the projects that we've talked about before and some of the new ones that have come about since the last time we've talked, and some of the changes that have happened to the things we have mentioned before. One of the things you're most known for, David, that we talked about with you originally was Codec 2, the open source audio codec. And I know you've made a lot of advancements and refinements to the codec in the last 5 years. So maybe if you would kind of recap what Codec 2 is and what's changed over the last 5 cycles around the sun.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, 5 years, long time. Okay, so Codec 2 is an open source, low bitrate speech codec. Most other speech codecs are closed source and proprietary, and you're not allowed to mess with them or compile them on the platform of your choice, whereas Codec 2 is all open source. So I guess in the last 5 years, I've been doing a lot of work with getting Codec 2 to work well over HF radio channels. And that's involved developing a bunch of modems to work with it and forward error correction, as well as pushing the bit rate down a bit, down significantly. So we're currently the latest 3DV mode, which is the combination of Codec 2 and the modem and forward error correction. That whole system's called 3DV. That's running at around 700 bits per second, and that's usable for speech communication over HF.
All right, fantastic. So you said something about pushing the bit rate down. I don't remember what the bit rate was at when we talked to you the first time. I want to say it was like 1400 bits per second or something like that, or maybe a little higher than that. How well have you got it down now?
Yeah, that's right. The original 3DV mode was called 3DV 1600, and that included the speech codec at 1300 bits per second, plus a little bit of overhead for forward error correction bits, so that the bit rate over the channel was around 1600. So we've pretty much halved the speech codec rate down to around 700 bits per second at the moment. There's even an experimental 450 bits per second mode that's recently been contributed by a German student as part of his master's. One of the nice things about being open source is it's available for everyone to experiment, and that's quite useful for people doing research.
Well, fantastic. So I mean, you obviously are trying to make sure that the audio is intelligible no matter how low you go with the bit rate. So how does a 450 bit per second voice sound?
Well, it sounds, you know, sometimes it's hard to understand and other times it comes through pretty well. One of the problems with the speech codec is making it work well for a whole lot of different voices, and that's one of the challenges. But, you know, it works okay. The 700 bits per second codec we've targeted to be competitive with single sideband at very low signal-to-noise ratios, at that point where SSB is getting hard to understand. And that works pretty well down at those SNRs, you know, down to about minus 2 dB or so.
Excellent. So you're going to try and be the voice competitor to FT8, which seems to be taking over the amateur radio bands right now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they sort of use similar ideas. You know, you get the modem right and a bit of forward error correction and compress your message enough, you can get through it to very low signal-to-noise ratios. Voice, real-time voice, unfortunately, is a bit higher bit rate, so you need a little bit more signal-to-noise there to get it through.
Yeah, absolutely. You're never going to get it down to the level of a digital mode, because when you have that little information, you can't really recreate the human voice, for sure, at least not intelligibly so. So... Bill, you had some points here you wanted to touch on, and you've done a little bit more research this time around than I have, so I'll let you ask a few questions of David.
Oh, I'm supposed to be part of this too.
You remember this? That's exactly right.
All right, so we have the current version of FreeDV is what, the 700D? Is that what we're talking about? With the codec to 2200?
Yeah, sure, your FreeDV supports a variety of different modes. You can run it using a GUI, a cross-platform GUI program, and that's got little mode buttons for the various modes. So the 1600 mode's still in pretty wide use, and also there's 700D and a few other experimental modes as well.
Yeah. So I also was looking here at your current projects, and you showed the SM2000, and this looks like some kind of VHF, UHF kind of brother to the SM1000. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a few years ago, we ran a few tests and worked out we might have something competitive for VHF and UHF radio. In particular, with the right speech codec, the right modem, it looks like we can push down to very low signal-to-noise ratios, maybe 10 dB better than FM, analog FM, and the current digital voice modes that are out there for UHF, VHF. So we started building the SM2000 as a way to test that. So it's a sort of like a ground-up radio design, specifically for FreeDV modes. We made good progress on that for a while, but then life's got in the way, unfortunately, so it's been a bit delayed. However, the actual modes we've developed are available in software, and they can also run on SDRs, so there's a few people experimenting with those, and that's one of the modes that's also available on the FreeDV GUI program. It can be hooked up to a regular FM radio and run through that.
Oh, so you can run all the FreeDV modems right over top of FM as well.
Not all of them. One of the tricks is to get high performance, as we need for some of the more advanced experimental modes, is we need to bypass the FM modulator and discriminator. They're a cause of a lot of the performance woes with modems. But some of the modes we've designed to be compatible with legacy FM radios.
Well, that would be a great thing if there was something to replace the D-Star, Fusion, and all these other ones that are sort of proprietary and require that AMBI chip, and that this could run all in software and could get enough of a footprint out there, being an open and available product. That would be pretty spectacular.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Yeah, the other thing we've noticed is I think we can get better performance as well. So it's not just the open aspect, which is cool enough, but to actually be able to get better performance, I think that's what's possible in the future. Trick is, of course, you know, a fair bit of work to develop a custom radio, and there aren't too many of us working on it. So that's a sort of a project that needs to be pushed forward a little bit with some more hands and soldering irons.
Well, speaking of custom radio, this was something I was just thinking about. We've talked recently with the folks over at Flex Radio, and one of the things they tout is that they're basically a hardware platform looking for some software. And I know that Codec 2 has been implemented in the Flex Radio multiverse. So are you involved with that at all in getting that to be used with that kind of platform or other SDR platforms for doing voice communication with that sort of embedded in the hardware?
Yeah, I'm sort of there's another guy, Brady O'Brien, who's been doing some work porting the more recent FreeDV modes to the Flex system. And I think they're up to the 700B. B or C, perhaps C. That was some work done late last year. Since then, we've released the 700D mode, which is much higher performance. So I'm not sure if that's running in the Flex ecosystem just yet.
All right, very cool. This SDR and the idea of programming codecs into hardware and having a platform that's sort of agnostic to the data or the voice path that you put over it is kind of a really neat thing to me anyway. I hope it's interesting to other folks as well. So the SM2000 and the SM1000, those are both the hardware modems, I guess, or am I thinking of something else? I think the SM1000 was like the HF hardware modem that was supposed to do the dual sound card and all of that, and so you had one piece of hardware that did all that for you for FreeDV?
Yeah, that's right. The SM1000 is a replacement for the computer and the sound card. It's a little blue box that you can just hook up to a HF radio and get going with FreeDV 1600. We're also in the process of porting the latest 700D mode to that. It's got a little microcontroller. Also, the SM1000 is a complete commercial product. They're for sale right now, whereas the SM2000 is an R&D project sitting on the bench.
But I'm sure you hope to have that to be a real thing here before too long.
Yeah, or something of a derivative. It's kind of an experimental thing and testing a lot of new concepts, so not quite sure where that will fall out. As you say, these days it's possible to set the same algorithms on SDR platforms and just have them implemented in software.
All right, fantastic. What was the other thing I was thinking of here before we move on? Oh, as far as FreeDV is concerned, I have, you know, after the first time we talked, I've used FreeDV. I've actually been on HF and, you know, started up the FreeDV application and got out there with my two sound card configuration and actually made a contact or two. But of late, I've been finding that trying to get a QSO started using FreeDV has been rather difficult. Now, I know there's the QSO Finder for FreeDV. It's a web application where it's supposed to allow you to find other people who are using FreeDV, but there's almost never anyone in there. So are you or is anybody associated with FreeDV trying to promote adoption or use of FreeDV, or are you just putting it out there as a theory and letting whoever uses it use it?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, my main interest is in pushing the art of digital voice forward, and there's a fair bit of work that goes into the software already, so it's hard for me to also run the advocation size aside. But there are quite a few groups. They're on freedv.org who have regular skeds. We have one here in Australia on 40 metres, and we get quite a lot of activity on 40 metres on Sunday mornings. And there's another a group of guys who are quite active in the Houston area, southeast of your country, I think. So there's skeds and they're active as well. And it's also groups in the Netherlands, Europe, the UK. So there's people out there if you want to make a contact. But yeah, we're not exactly blowing up the airwaves with 3DV traffic at the moment.
Which is okay. It doesn't have to have wide acceptance. It's certainly about the conceptual nature of codec too, and pushing the art of highly compressible voice forward and using it in the future, I'm sure. And that's where you just said your main focus is. So I can understand that to a certain extent. Do you know of any sites other than freedv.org that sort of does anybody have like a clearinghouse of information on like who uses it and when and things like that? These nets that you mentioned and so on?
Yeah, that's on the front page of freedv.org. Just down the bottom there's a list of nets and times and frequencies and the geographic area that they cover.
All right. So Bill put in here, and I guess I could let him ask the question, but I won't. The SM1000 and the actual hardware platform for HF digital voice using the codec 2 and FreeDV, what was the response to that? I mean, did it go over well? I mean, did it do what you expected, I suppose?
Yeah, it works really well. And, you know, we've sold several hundred of the things. They keep selling. So people are using them. And it's also, there's a bit of a developer community around it. There's quite a few people who are interested in working on it, developing code for it. Being a cool open source embedded product, it's you can actually get in there and modify it if you want to. So had quite a few contributions from other people, and working with a few people at the moment on the code. It works well. It's a little embedded unit without an operating system. So that was the first time I'd done a lot of work with embedded Linux, and this was the first time I'd done something without an operating system. But the cool thing is it boots like an old school AM radio. You switch it on and voice starts coming out straight away. It just syncs up and does its thing. So yeah, that's had a pretty good response, and we're quite happy with the product. It's quite stable, no real bugs with the hardware. But the main aim now is to get the firmware up to date and get the new modes running on it.
Excellent. And before I let Bill have the floor once again, I want to ask one more question about FreeDV itself, the software application FreeDV. How involved were you in the development of that? And were you enough involved in the actual development of the FreeDV, GUI application, not Codec 2, to be able to talk a little bit about the, installation setup and configuration of FreeDV if someone wanted to kind of jump into that?
I'm currently maintaining the FreeDV GUI application as well as Codec 2 and all the associated DSP software. So happy to answer questions. In terms of setup, there's a couple of mailing lists, one Digital Voice Google group and the Codec 2 list, where if people have questions about setup, various rigs and things, that's a good way to post it, because there are, hundreds if not thousands of people who have set it up, and they've probably solved the same problem you have in the past.
One thing I did find out about FreeDV in all the times that I've had to set it up, because I've reinstalled the operating system on my Shack computer many, many times, and I've always reinstalled FreeDV when I've done that. But when you're in the GUI where you're configuring the sound card, because you have two sound cards basically, which can either be physical or virtual, but in either case, there is a reference sound device. And when you're configuring those, you have to configure one for inbound audio and one for outbound audio, but you have to configure them at the same time. You can't configure the inbound audio, click save, and then go in and click set the outbound audio and click save, because that never works. If you're going to configure the application, you have to do both audio devices at the same time and save them at the same time. Otherwise, the configuration basically disappears. I don't know if that would be considered a bug, but I've noticed that every time I've tried to set it up.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that one myself. If you can sort of post the exact steps to reproduce it, be happy to take a look. Yeah, I do tend to set up both sound cards at the same time, though, so it might just be something I haven't fallen through. You also have the option to set up none on the transmit side if you just want a receive station. That's a good way to get started.
It's usually what it is the bit rate, because it defaults, I think, to 48,000, if I'm not mistaken. On the sound card, but if you set 48,000 on one and don't set it on the other, it will default to 48,000. If you need it to be 41.2 or whatever, it doesn't set properly. I guess I can go through it again and see, and maybe file a bug report if it does it again. But I've never, every time I've set one without setting the other, one of the settings is set incorrectly.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, it will trap you if it doesn't have the right set of sample rates. There's a lot of sort of back and forth, like your speech samples going in one sound card, then get turned into modem samples that go out another. So things need to match up a little bit there. But yeah, sure, if you can reproduce it and you think it's a bug, post it to the mailing list and we'll take a look.
All right, it's probably not that important. But the other thing I noticed about it is the waterfall, or the way the waterfall works in the FreeDV world, is kind of different. In a lot of other applications like PSK31LX or FL Digi or something like that, you have a waterfall that shows you a band pass, or pass band, not a band pass, a pass band, and you can sort of see like peaks and valleys that indicate a signal, or you can see a line that comes down through the waterfall that indicates a signal. There really sort of isn't that with FreeDV. There's no way to use the waterfall to find a signal, if you understand what I'm saying. I didn't know if that was something that could be done, or if it's just the way FreeDV works, where you can't really do that. It's either the waterfall is showing a signal or it isn't.
Yeah, it's basically capturing the 8 kilohertz and, the 4 kilohertz of the SSB radio spectrum. And FreeDV uses up a big chunk of that, usually around a kilohertz or so. So you're not going to be able to see multiple signals with the regular audio type interface to your SSB radio. It's a much wider signal than, say, PSK31 or something.
Is there a new way to sort of expand that, maybe like an SDR receiver would be, where you actually show like a really wide passband, or is it just so big that there's no way to really conceivably do that?
There's no feature at the moment. Conceivably, if you had a very high sample rate going into it, like not from an audio card, but from a maybe an SDR or something, then you could probably modify it to do that if you wanted to. I accept patches, so anyone wants to add a feature, send it in.
Thank you for knocking the ball back in my court. I appreciate that. All right, Bill, go for it.
Yeah, so along with all this great FreeDV stuff, I happened to be looking at some of the WinLink stuff, and I caught a chat between you and the developers over there on their developer list about RDOP. What can you tell us about ARDOP?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting open source story. When I got first started in applying Codec 2 to HF radio, I had some really interesting chats with some of the RDOP guys because they were doing a lot of open source HF modems, and they told me how they worked and taught me a little bit of information. I went and ran with it from there. And then, 5 years later, I worked pretty hard on getting a really good HF modem working. Well, it had to be good enough for digital voice, so I went through many iterations. And then I went back to RDOP and found out that it was outperforming what they had. So I said, hey, guys, look, I've done this. Maybe, this could be useful for you. So I think I approached them 3 or 4 months ago. And they've since implemented a few of the features of the modem that I'm using for FreeDV700D. That's called an OFDM modem. But there's quite a few other features they could add. And hopefully, we can improve the art of open source HF data, above and beyond digital voice, but also for transferring emails and things like that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like an interesting project over there. I didn't know it has been going on that long. I thought this was like a new mode to replace, I guess, WinMore, which is replacing what PacTor. It's still kind of all new to me since I'm just now getting back into WinLink and just kind of dumping through the mailing list, and I happened to catch your name in there. I was like, there's some conversation here. So that's really interesting that you've had such a kind of a longer history with that particular project.
Yeah, it is great. It's great to give something back too, and to be able to share things. And these modems are hard. People who can code modems and make them work is a small church, and it's even smaller on HF. So if we can work together, we can really do some cool things.
Yeah, absolutely. What other projects are you currently working on that we weren't able to find the hard and easy way?
Well, what I'm working on today is I'm using some Raspberry Pis to transmit data over HF. There's a piece of software called RPiTX by a French ham. But you can look that up. It's on GitHub, and that turns your Raspberry Pi into a transmitter at various different frequencies just with software. The RF comes out of GPIO. So you just put a little bit of a low-pass filter on that because it's a square wave coming out, and you've got a low-power transmitter. I'm interested in using that for HF data. Can we transfer files and things like that over a few hundred miles? Using something like a Raspberry Pi for a transmitter with perhaps a small power amplifier. And I'm playing around with using an RTL SDR as the HF receiver. So that's one of the projects I'm currently working on. Also, gradually pushing FreeDV forward as well. Doing a little bit of work on a high quality mode at a higher bitrate, but getting higher quality than, say, SSB at high SNRs when it's not such a bad copy.
Yeah, pretty cool. Russ?
Well, you burned out quick there, Bill.
I know. I'm eventually going to figure out how these interview things work. but for now, I'm just going to push it back into your court.
That's fine, I guess. There's a couple other projects that you talked about a long time ago when we were talking, which we will probably get to or at least touch on briefly before we let you go. But Bill, you actually found something where it was mentioning his involvement in WinLink. Was it only the ARDOP stuff, or was it something else? Because I asked him about it yesterday, and he said he'd been contacted by the WinLink guys, I guess, or the WinModem guys, or something like that. Do you recall that?
Oh, I just found it in the mailing list from July. That conversation that he was having that we just talked about.
Yeah, it had something to do with modems or something, and they wanted you to be involved with modem technology or something like that. I can't remember exactly the question I asked and the response you gave me.
Yeah, I was just talking to them about using the modem technology I'd developed, and maybe it could help them out with higher data rates.
Okay, well, so is that related to Codec 2, or is that something else entirely? I'm just wondering, like, which technology that you've been developing that they were interested in that could help out.
This is the Winmore ARDOP guys.
So yes. Yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. So that was basically the same thing. All right, sorry to reiterate.
Yeah, but. Yeah, I guess the thing was, at least that stood out to me as well when I was reading that conversation, was the fact that they're wanting to use QAM to do the signaling, the constellation type signaling, so like QPSK or something like that. That's more can handle more lower signal to noise ratios and still be recoverable. So I thought that was kind of interesting from my RF background in cable and cable modems and stuff like that. It was kind of interesting to see them trying to pick something more digital to use. that has its own set of problems and limitations, and when they're looking at doing a protocol or a modem to be a robust solution to deliver data in not the best conditions.
Yeah, that's right. They have a bunch of different. They get to do QPSK, then QAM, and different levels of bits, and sort of shifts gears depending on the signal to noise ratio available. That's one of the big challenges they have. You know, when to send. At what bit rate, if a packet doesn't go through, do you slow down, things like that.
So from a quasi-philosophical angle, it's not like there hasn't always been a desire to work another station during poor solar cycles or weak band conditions and things like that, but it seems like the art of communicating in weak signals signal to noise ratios of minus 25 dB and things like that, the ability to have communications when basically communications aren't technically possible, seems to be a driving force in the technologies that are being developed today. So did you notice that, and is there some reason why there's a surge in development in this area?
I think it's because we've got cycles available. You can have a computer on your desk like the one we're using now that can do a lot of processing compared to what we had, 10 or 20 years ago. So now we can, so we're going to do it. From my point of view, it's been a bit of a challenge to try and get something competitive, digital voice competitive with SSB. SSB still works really well. But what we've got now is something that works at least for a lot of people in a lot of cases at lower SNRs than SSB. So if you can't get through an SSB, you might be able to get through one 3DV 700D. And there's people using that around the world right now.
Do you see voice continuing as a useful method of communication, or do you think that data and digital will kind of take over because you can pack more information into a much smaller area?
I think there'll always be a place for voice. One thing I think that's kind of missing a bit from the ham radio community is something equivalent to text messages or SMS, because that seems to be taking over, short messaging, every other form of communication. And so it'd be nice to see, we have these sort of canned message modes where you send your call sign and sure, you log the QSO, but you're not really having a talk. But something that lets you sort of message people over ham radio would be a nice innovation.
So the next generation of FT8 will be FT8R, where the R stands for RAGCHU, and that will be...
Well, FT8 call, they have it already.
Yeah, I guess so.
Of course, you can only send little short messages, like...
What, about 140 characters?
I think it's a little less than that, actually.
Yeah, I imagine so, but it's kind of funny. All right. So what else do we have? Oh, we have a couple of the other projects that you had been working on at least a long time ago. I don't know if you're still working on them, but you had a mesh technology called Mesh Potato. Is that still a thing, or has like the other mesh technologies that have been developed kind of superseding that?
Yeah, that's still going strong. That was part of a project called the Village Telco, and we built these Wi-Fi based boxes with a POTS telephony line. You plug in a landline to one side of this box, and the other side is a Wi-Fi radio. And the idea was to provide telephony networks for villages in the developing world. But that project's still going strong, and the mesh potatoes are still out there being used. I think there's something like 10,000 or so have been made. Still moving along well. I'm not directly involved with it, but still in touch with some of the people I started the project with.
All right, fantastic. So I know you have your hands on a lot of things going on here, and a lot of them are based on, I don't remember if it was your formal training, but I think you're mostly involved in sound research or audio research and things like that. So everything you do kind of revolves around audio in some way, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. The degree I did was in speech compression, low bit rate speech coding, and I'm managed to dust that off and use it in the real world. So that's been kind of cool.
Well, it's always nice to be able to use your area of expertise in the real world and make something out of it.
Yeah, that's right. So that's kept me pretty busy.
Yeah, you didn't like go the liberal arts route and now hand out flowers on the sidewalk or something. I don't know if that's a thing in Australia or not, but.
Oh, yeah. I've had a few jobs like that as well.
So is there any project or anything or any integration with the projects that you're working on that we haven't touched on that maybe we don't know about? Any like super secret things you can tell us? I don't know. Obviously, you're trying to make this stuff as popular as possible. You're not really hiding anything because it's all in the open source world and you want it out there as much as possible. So I know there's no secrets here, but have we missed anything?
No, that's pretty good coverage.
All right. So so what's the future of FreeDV and Codec 2 that you see, and what will the SM3000 be about?
Yeah, good question. I guess the current drive is to, we've actually got something here with this 700D. We're beating SSB in one corner of its performance at these very low SNRs. So the trick from there is to taking this modem that's working so well and the speech codec and see what we can do to push the quality up of the system. When it's RAG2 quality, and can we get better quality than SSB there? So that's the current research drive. And there's also some other work going on in taking what we've got and getting it running on embedded systems like the SM1000 and continuing to play around with modems and things like that and just get better quality open source DSP code out there.
So do you know if Codec 2 is being used anywhere else other than Flex Radio? I mean, are there like repeater systems, like any like DMR stuff or anything that can handle other digital protocols also using the Codec 2?
There's nothing in widespread use, but what is really cool is a bunch of guys are grabbing this, hooking it up to an SDR and building their own systems and playing around on the bench or their local repeater. So there's quite a lot of innovation, and these people write blog posts and pop up on the Codec 2 mailing list from time to time. So that kind of stuff's pretty cool.
So what is the most interesting way you've seen Codec 2 used?
Recently, there was an academic paper, stuff called WaveNet, which came out of Google, where they used a Codec 2 encoder, and the decoder was basically sort of WaveNet-style speech synthesis using machine learning and requires a couple of GPU cards to run, but the quality was amazing. It was like the sort of quality we've got now or better at 2400 bits per second. So, Codec 2 got used in academia to push the art forward.
So what was the application there? Was it text-to-speech or something? Or
speech compression, just like we're using now. We're using a speech codec at the moment to talk, and they were using it for the same application. Same thing I use FreeDV for, but they were getting quality at which would normally take 4 or 5 times the bitrate.
Wow, fantastic. So how much further do you think Codec 2 can go? I mean, how much compression can you get and still have intelligible language?
I think we can push down to around 300 bits per second at sort of SSB radio type quality, so something that would be roughly equivalent to what we put up with on HF radio. And at the high end, we should be able to get quality like we're using today at a couple of thousand bits per second.
Oh, it sounds amazing. I can't wait to hear what it sounds like, a 300 bit per second voice communication. one that's good, high quality. Well, not high. It's not going to be high quality. It's not going to be HD radio or anything, but to have decent speech, I assume it will. You can't avoid a little bit of, sort of roboticness at that level.
Yeah, we should be able to get something that's comparable to, SSB. Understandable, you can tell who's talking, you can tell what they're saying, but it'll have a few artifacts in it, will be a little bit objectionable to listen to, but, enough to have a conversation on.
All right, very good. Are there any plans for any updates or later releases of FreeDV? Are there any, bug fixes or feature updates in the works?
At the moment, it's going pretty well. I don't know of any major problems with the current release we put out a few months ago. So I think at this stage, we'll, rather than a maintenance thing, we'll see what happens in the algorithm development, you know, if we come up with something useful to use. These things take a while too, like FreeDV 700D, the latest release. There's probably, you know, over 1,000 man-hours of effort in that. They're not weekend projects. So always looking for help. If people like C coding and want to learn a bit about DSP, feel free to contact me, and there's always something to do.
All right. That's a great thing. We'll let you give some information about where people can contact you at the end of this. But thankfully, Don in the chat room has asked a question. So now that we've run out of ours, we have one we can ask you. And his question is, this is from Don, KC9ZMY, by the way, and he asks, why do you need two sound devices? And can the sound device, sound card and a USB headset. So he's asking, why do you need two sound devices, and can they be, you know, like a sound card and a USB headset? I know for a fact that can be a sound card and a USB headset, but why is it set up where you need two DSPs, basically?
Yeah, it just worked out easier with two sound cards. It is technically possible to use one if you can switch between the transmit-receive path, but when a USB headset is $5 or $10, you know, and a lot of rigs have the USB sound card built in already, it just makes it easier from a setup point of view.
So it's just a matter of the sound, the audio path going in opposite directions and having to be able to switch between the two, and was easier to do with two devices?
That's right, yeah, and get things like sample rates lined up. So when you're transmitting, your voice is going in the microphone on one sound card and coming out the speaker on another sound card that gets put into the mic input of your radio, your radio transmitter. Sure, you could probably get away with one if you had some analog switches or things, but that's a little bit more difficult than just buying another sound card sometimes.
I'm sorry, that cracked me up. Don said it because you need the Gazinta and the Gazauta.
That's right, yeah.
That's funny. Do you have any idea of what kind of penetration you have with the FreeDV? Like how many installs have actually been done over the years?
No, I don't. And we don't really get any records from downloads. So don't really have any idea.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, it definitely sounds like we need to keep talking about FreeDV and getting it out there, and maybe even possibly see a FreeDV QSO party out here in the future that can stir up some international partying.
Yeah, well, there's some records to be had too. I don't know anyone who's gone across the Pacific, say from here to the US yet, on FreeDV 700D. And like I said, it outperforms SSB, so it's certainly possible in a practical sense. So there's a whole lot of things that haven't been done with HF digital voice on the ham bands that someone with the right station will be able to do, even in these low band conditions.
Yeah, even you, Russ, you can get your radio going over there on 6 meters.
My radio is going. my 6 meter. Yeah, yeah. All right. I have a 6 meter radio. You gave it to me. It's sitting right here next to me. Just doesn't have an antenna yet because I'm way too lazy to build one. Yeah, I'll get around to that someday. I was trying to get, Pat set up earlier, and I kind of got that working, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Is this another question from Don? Was there talk about this going into a satellite? I thought I remember hearing something about it. I'm assuming he's talking about Codec 2 or FreeDV going on a satellite.
Yeah, about a year ago, it went up on a Chinese CubeSat from Harbin University in China, and they had... It was an FM uplink and then Codec 2 with a proprietary, well, not proprietary modem, but a different modem to what we normally use for FreeDV on the downlink. But you hook the whole thing up with GNU radio and a beam antenna. And we had a great time listening to ourselves on Codec 2 from satellite as it whizzed over.
So this wasn't used for an actual QSO or anything?
Yeah, plenty of people used it for QSOs. It was just like using any other low Earth orbit amateur radio satellite. So people were talking across the country on it. I think that because of its altitude, the footprint was about probably 1,000 miles, something like that. You could have QSOs over.
You're using a lot of past tense here. Is this not possible anymore, or is it still out there?
LilacSat 1, I'd have to check. I'm not sure if it's still operational. The CubeSats have a pretty low life time by intention. They don't want them up there in space forever. It was pushed off the ISS, and my understanding was the lifetime was about 3 months, but I haven't looked at it recently.
Yeah, sometimes things go up into space that are supposed to be short-term, and they wind up being there a while.
yeah, could still be there. Have a look around. there was other issues about, you know, the way it points and rotations and things like that to whether you could hook up to it. But it was kind of cool hearing my own voice come back through coded via my own codec from space.
Yeah, that definitely has to be at least a little bit of a source of pride for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. And now the same university has put a satellite in lunar orbit. It sort of hitchhiked on the back of a more major Chinese lunar probe. And there's hams sending and receiving telemetry from that satellite in lunar orbit, although I don't think it's doing digital voice, this one.
All right. That's kind of interesting. You don't hear a lot about satellites in lunar orbit. You hear a lot of ones in Terran orbit, but lunar orbit is not something you really talk about or most people are even interested in. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever heard anyone mention it up until today.
Yeah, there's quite a lot about it on Twitter, some of the guys in the SDR scene. So, yeah, just Google that, Harvard University, lunar ham radio satellite, and that's pretty cool. You need quite an antenna, I think, to pick it up because the signal's fairly weak, but a lot of people are managing to detect signals, and it's sending images via slow scan TV of the moon.
Oh, that's fantastic. And we are expanding the art of weak signal transmission. I mean, that's kind of where we're at right now. So I'm sure pretty soon there'll be some Linux-based technology where you can receive SSTV from the, you know, lunar orbit. That would be really cool, actually, now that I think of it.
Yeah, well, that's what this is doing. It's sending SSTV images from the of the moon from lunar orbit.
I got to get me one of those pictures.
I think you're going to need some beams.
Yeah, I might need a little better setup here than I currently have. But
yeah, that's sort of more on that theme of weak signal, because they don't get in too much weaker than from that destination.
Yeah, yeah. 280,000 miles, is that what it is roughly out there?
Yeah, it's a bit better than EME, though, because it's just a one-way trip from the satellite. But then again, the powers are very low. And just like the work I've been doing, this theme of good quality modems. I helped them out a little bit with the modem that they're using to receive that signal from the satellite, and just getting the performance of the modem right. And because it can be software, we can make it free software and get these really high quality modems out there, and they make such a difference. You know, rather than putting a great big power amplifier on, you can upgrade your software and get 10 dB performance gain.
Well, that was a turn that I did not expect this conversation to go, but it's probably been most interesting part of it to me. Yeah. So I'm gonna have to start investigating lunar orbit satellites for amateur radio. That's really cool. All right, so I think we already asked you if we missed something, and you kind of indicated we didn't. So any other questions? I saw that Jonas actually popped into the Mumble here, so I don't know if he was just wanting to listen through Mumble, or if he actually had a question to ask, or just wanted to say hi or what. Oh, just listening. Okay, good.
That's one way to listen.
That is one way to listen too. Yep. If you're gonna, there's no more direct way. So do you have any more questions, Bill? Anybody else in the chat room who's listening on the live stream have a question for David that we managed to skip over somehow? I know the last time you said you we talked about your electric Holden, if I remember correctly.
It's electric Daihatsu.
Oh, Daihatsu. That's right. It was a Daihatsu.
Yeah. It's a little, I'm not sure if you have them there. You probably had a similar car, but a little Daihatsu Charade. I've got some pictures of it on my, yeah. And I'm just out there just sort of maintaining it a little bit at the moment, actually, giving a bit of a trickle charge. Some of the cells got a bit out of alignment. So I've been messing around with that this morning.
We here in the U.S. actually had Daihatsu. They sold Daihatsus here for a little while.
Yeah, well, it's an old car now. It's like 25 years old. So, the old simple ones are good to convert to electric drive, because there's, you know, you don't need a computer to switch them on. You know, you can just pull all that out and put your own drive system in. I've got an electric boat now too, solar powered electric boat that I've been using on some local rivers and things.
Well, you're always doing very interesting things, so it's fantastic to get a chance to talk to you again. So I appreciate you, again, taking some time out of your morning, because you're obviously busy. I mean, I don't know if you have an actual job or anything, but with all the things you're doing, whether you do or not, you're obviously not lying around or sleeping much.
Yeah, there's always something going on, that's for sure.
All right, so we'll just throw it out one more time. Anybody else have any quick questions or anything they want to ask David before we let him get on with the rest of his tomorrow, since it's already tomorrow for you? So we'll just sit here and wait for people to
got the 10-second stream delay.
Yeah, waiting for the gears to turn. All right. Well, if anybody has any questions, feel free to pop them out. But in the meantime, we'll start kind of winding this down and wrapping it up. And if you wouldn't mind, you've mentioned that you're looking for people who are interested to help you out and submissions and things like that. So if you could mention some websites or email addresses or anything you want to put out there so people can find your projects and maybe email you or contact you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, just if you just have a look at FreeDV or Codec 2, you'll see a contact page, and that's got my email up on it. Or post to the Codec 2 mailing list. And that's easy to find as well. And if you're interested in working on FreeDV in any way.
Any other folks who do the development with you that you want to put out there and make them smile a little bit because they got mentioned on a podcast that's listened to by all of 7 or 8 people?
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of people who help. There's a lot of people using FreeDV. There's teams all over the world. They're mentioned on freedv.org. And also there's some active developers going on at the moment. A few people who are doing constant work on things like the Makefile system. One's a gentleman by the name of Richard, US ham. Another gentleman I'm working closely at the moment called Don, another US ham, who's working on the firmware for the SM1000. There are a couple of people who are, and I guess another group of my local amateur radio club, Adelaide Radio Experimenters Group. We do a lot of I'm doing a lot of projects with them as part of the club on stuff like high-altitude balloon telemetry and other fun stuff, as well as FreeDV.
All right. Fantastic. Well, once again, David, I really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you about some new and interesting thing you're doing in less than 5 years, because that's a really long time.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, and thanks for coming once again. We'll let you get back to You're tomorrow down there in Adelaide. And where is Adelaide again? Is that New South Wales or?
South Australia.
South Australia.
In the middle of the country on the bottom.
There's only 6 provinces, right? Or something like that. So.
Yeah, that's right. There's only 7 or 8 states and territories in the country. And they're pretty big, though, and a lot of desert.
I heard that you guys are actually having some severe drought problems down there. I don't know if that's specific to your location, but I guess Australia in general is pretty dry right now.
Yeah, that's right. Some of the farmers are doing it pretty tough at the moment, starting to see a few of the effects of climate change.
All right. Well, that's a discussion we're not getting into. So we'll go ahead and let you go, Dave. Thanks once again. This has been David Rowe, Rotel.com and Codec 2 and FreeDV and all the other things you do, VK5DGR. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Thank you. See you later.
All right. Well, that's that. I guess we're down just about to the end of the show. We do have a couple of bits we're going to tie up here at the end. One is an announcement, and that is just that we do have a Discord server. A few folks are trickling into the Discord server. So if you use Discord, or even if you don't, you could sign up and be a part of Discord. There will be a link in the show notes. I believe there's been a link in previous show notes as well that contains the invite.
No fighting yet.
To the Discord server. So by all means, join us there. And the Discord server uses Discord IRC to channel the communications from Discord into IRC and vice versa. So you'll be able to interact with anybody on either of those two modes. And we also had a bit of feedback on YouTube that I don't think we've addressed. This came in a few days ago. So this is from Ken Hendrickson. And he asks, and I'm going to send this one over to Bill, so because it's about Bill's installation tutorial on Ubuntu. And he says, great series of videos. Unfortunately, the PPA route does not work with Ubuntu 18.04 LTS and distros based on it. Any suggestions?
You fail. No, we did all the LHS builds with the PPA. So the PPAs still work. You obviously have that capability by default because it's Ubuntu. I would be interested to hear what flavor or what you're actually running. You might not actually be running Ubuntu. You might be running something sort of based on it that doesn't actually have, the PPA, software package or whatever. There's one package you have to have extra if you're not really running Ubuntu in one of the Ubuntu flavors. I would think you're probably not running Ubuntu, or you're doing something terribly wrong. I used the exact same setup and everything else for the LHS one V1 builds, which I installed on, you know, Ubuntu 18.04 LTS, Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Xubuntu, Budgie Ubuntu, any Ubuntu that they had available. Just get a hold of me directly if you're having any other issue with that, and I would be happy to assist you out of that rabbit hole you're in.
All right, very good. And Cheryl's back.
Woo-hoo.
You're no longer entertaining.
No, she carried all your trash out for you.
Okay. And no, we just pull up trash right here. There's trash right there.
She carried four bags of trash out of the kitchen.
Well, there's one more bag right there.
Well, you can take it out in the morning.
All right.
We're done with our baskets. So.
All right. Very good. So.
Awesome.
We'll, I think, just go ahead and call this one done. Thought it was pretty good, quite frankly. I think we learned some stuff.
Absolutely.
It doesn't always happen, but today it did.
Yay.
Wow, your enthusiasm is overwhelming.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be a free DV QSO party.
Yeah, we definitely need to do that.
We're going to have one here shortly.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a try. I don't even know if I still have free DV installed on my computer over here, but I'm going to give it a whirl. All right, so that's the end of this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. Thanks, everybody who listened, who joined in the chat room, and we'll go through the chat room right now because we had quite a few people in there. We had Ted, WA0EIR. We had Gene, BX8AAD, Don, KC9ZMY, Other Don, KB2YSI, Raymond, VK4TDX, Jim, VE5EV, Jonas Rulo, and a surprise appearance by Richard, KB5JBV. Ooh. So, yeah, surprising. So, thanks to everybody once again, and we hope you will tune into the next episode, which should be on Monday. It'll be episode number 243. We are skipping the next weekender due to time constraints and other issues. So check us out in a week and we'll be back then. So for now, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHS live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.